this Saturday night on Old Time Radio Drama. Gunsmoke, in fact, we'll hear the pilot episode. It's called Mark Dillon, U.S. Marshal, from 1949. We'll have George Burns and Gracie Allen tonight, blackmailing Jack Benny on a show from 1943. We'll have one of the adventures of Tarzan from 1932. The Great Gildersleeve from 1946. Boston Blackie from 1947. And Quiet Please with some science fiction from 1948. I'm Norman Gilliland, and I suppose you could say that this pilot episode of Gunsmoke shows how important a single voice could be in a show in terms of carrying the character and giving it some extra edge that makes it go the distance of a number of years on radio in the case of William Conrad, who took over the role early on in the thing. But tonight it's Howard Culver as Mark Dillon, U.S. Marshal, riding into a town called Gaujai, which doesn't sound very promising from the start, and things get worse when you throw in a rigged roulette wheel. In this pilot episode of Gunsmoke, it comes from July 15, 1949.
Gunsmoke, the story of the violence that moved westward with young America. The story of one man who moved with it, Mark Dillon, United States Marshal.
They all drifted here to Dodge City, one time or another. The buffalo killers, the saddle bums, the spoilers. It's the end of the track and the start of the wilderness, the dumping ground of odds and ends and beginnings and leftovers. It's a place to stop and take the kind of pleasure you need. It's a place to pass through, and sometimes it's a place to die. My part of it was a sun-baked shack, rent paid by the United States government, and a marshal's badge, furnished free. I was at the window watching the heat plump itself with Kansas dust and roll in towards the town when the door opened.
Your name, Dillon? You the United States Marshal?
She was about 50. Poke bonnet, gingham dress, beaded Indian moccasins for shoes.
He said there was a steady marshal here in Dodge City. Been living for 6 months running.
They've been lying to you. 4 months.
They say you and your gun can break a man's heart at 50 yards.
What's on your mind?
Want you to saddle up and get down to Gaujai.
Why?
My husband. He owns the White Buffalo there. Roulette, music, drinks. They say the roulette wheel's crooked.
I'll tell you what to do. There's a fella here in Dodge City named a Sin Killer Stokes. Saves souls by the bushel. Trumpet playing and everything. You tell Sin Killer about your husband.
In Gaujai, they kill a man who runs a crooked wheel. I don't want my husband dead.
Well, look, ma'am, I don't even
Abigail
know
Abigail Contuarius. That's my name.
Yeah, well, Mrs. Contuarius, you don't need a marshal. You need an honest husband.
He's no more crooked than you are. If he was, I wouldn't take none of his money.
Sure.
Don't sure me, Marshal. Money don't just mean money to me. It means books for Indian kids and writing stuff. Slates and all.
Oh, a missionary.
Me? With a gambler and a philanderer and a toper for a husband? I teach Indian kids. Teach them to behave and a little learning, that's all.
Well, that's good work, ma'am. These towns could use more people like you.
Don't sniff around me. You marshals are supposed to mean law and order and the rights of decent people. Gaujai could use some of that. You coming, or do I have to ride my mule some more?
Ride it back to Gaujai. I'll be along.
Make it soon, Marshal. There'll be a convulsion down there if you don't.
It was night when the town of Gaujai loomed out of the wilderness and beckoned to me like a painted, skinny hag. If Dodge City had a sister, this was it. I rode up to the White Buffalo, started to tie my horse to a hitching post, whittled to the shape of a Pawnee girl, when suddenly the gun in my back told me I wasn't alone.
You won't like it here in Gaujai, Marshal. Pretty as it is, you won't like it.
No?
No. Don't turn around, Marshal. I'm shy, I'm modest, I embarrass easy. Isn't that so, Harold? See? Harold thinks it's so. Harold had his tongue clipped. Apaches.
Maybe it was too long.
Oh, it's not a genteel thing to say to Harold, Marshal. He takes offense easy.
I'm new here. Back in Dodge City, the etiquette's a little more formal.
Then go back to Dodge. We're happy here in Galjai, like little birds. You could spoil it.
I was invited. Special invitation.
Yeah? Well, the dance is over. Now, Harold, now! I told you you wouldn't like it in Galjai, Marshal.
When I opened my eyes, I was in Galjai's dirt. I knew I'd never forget that voice and that crazy giggle. I picked myself up and waited till the town stopped its dizzy dance. On its third time around, I spotted a horse trough and stuck my head in it to get rid of the blood on my face. I finally pushed my bones through the swinging doors of the White Buffalo. A girl leaned against the bar, strumming a guitar. Black hair, slender. Something profane and exquisite was distilled into her features. She watched me across the room, and when she spoke, it was as if she hadn't quit singing.
Buenas noches, chico.
Evening.
Oh, a marshal. A marshal with a cup face and a muddy badge. You buy girls drinks, marshal?
Here's a buck. Buy yourself one. Where can I find the owner?
Over there by the poker table.
Which one?
The goatee and pompadour.
Thanks.
Come back to me, chico. They call me Tamar.
Tamar, huh? Maybe I will. Your name, Contrarius?
Si. Oh, the marshal from Dodge City. You already have the look of a large headache, senor.
Yeah? Someone else besides you and your wife was expecting me.
Muy mal. Too bad.
It wasn't good.
No, I see. But I am glad you have come, senor marshal. Come, look around. See my place. I have a magnificent establishment here. No? Yes.
No.
Yes. You know, it would grieve me if I had to part with it.
It'd grieve Mrs. Contrarius more, and for a better reason.
Senora Contrarius hates it how I get my money, but she takes it for the Indian children.
Looks like the take's plenty.
No. Every day my wheel loses money. Somebody is swindling me. This somebody, I swear it, I will kill you dead.
Your wife hinted it might be you who'd be killed dead.
No one has killed me yet. This I tell myself and it makes me happy.
Yeah. Well, let's have a look at this wheel of yours.
Of course. Follow me. You see, I have also faro, dice, girls, dancing girls.
Mm-hmm.
And the finest liquor west of the Mississippi.
Number 12. Red face, 12 face.
Where's your spinner?
I will introduce you to him. Greg.
Señor.
Un momento. William will take your place.
Yes, Mr. Contrarius.
Greg Hagen, the best croupier in the territory. Greg, I want you to meet Mark Dillon, Marshal of the United States of America.
I've heard your name, Dillon. You're from Dodge City.
Lately from there. Go count your chips, Contrarius. Hagen and I want to talk.
Yes, I leave you gentlemen alone.
We want to talk, Marshal?
Yeah. Rumor has it the wheel's rigged.
Mrs. Contrarius tell you to ask?
Maybe. Well, is it?
Look, Marshal, Contrarius is my friend.
Still, a croupier's in a mighty good spot to double-cross the house.
Marshal, I already told you, Contrarius is my friend.
Sorry, I made a mistake. No hard feelings?
Plenty hard feelings. I think I like it better back at the table. Look around yourself, Marshal.
So I did. Mostly, I hung around the roulette table. And as far as I could see, the wheel was giving the house and the customers an even break. Just about the time I was ready to go out and find Contrarius again, two new players wandered up to the crowded table. One in a beaded jacket, the other a silent hulk of a man. They didn't seem to be together or even know each other. On the next spin, the ball fell into 29, bounced out, rolled around 13, and finally settled in 00. Just as it did, beaded jacket reached out and put a $100 bill on 00. Greg Hagen, the croupier, looked up.
I'm sorry, mister. You placed your bet after the ball settled. The house can't accept it.
I had that $100 down before you started to spin. Ask anybody. I had it down. I want to ask the people. I'm telling you, I had it down.
Look, mister, your bet wasn't legitimate. The house recommends you take your money and get out.
He did. Fast. Too fast. In another second, I knew the reason why. When Beaded Jacket picked up the bill, there was a blue chip under it on 00, and the house paid off to the silent Hulk. I knew I'd heard Beaded Jacket's voice before. When I first hit town, so I moved fast. I got out of the casino just in time to see Beaded Jacket disappear around the corner. I took it easy, polite and easy. The bullet nubbed the dust at my feet. I ducked into the shadows and whipped out my guns. The flash had come from a narrow passageway between two buildings.
In this alley, Marshal. Come on in and get me.
Wait right there.
I'm waiting. Now strike a match. I want to see your face when it happens to you.
Try me.
No. You shoot first. You'll miss, you know that, Marshal. But I won't. Because your gun flash will tell me where you are.
Real clever. That was clever what you did back at the White Buffalo.
Honest Injun. Tell me about it.
You and your friend. That was Harold, huh? The giggle with the talent for pistol whipping?
Tell me all about it.
You throw down a $100 bill with a blue chip underneath it after the ball drops. You get yourself thrown out. Harold, who never made a bet at all, collects 35-1.
Oh, did Harold do that? Did you do that, Harold?
And there he was, framed in the entrance of the alley. I was caught between them. Beaded Jacket and a mute called Harold. The big guns in Harold's hands turned over and over. His face held all the evil in the world.
You're right, Harold. Take him.
He was shooting waist high along the wall, and he was getting close. There was only one thing to do, and I couldn't miss.
You shot Harold, Marshal. That was your mistake.
Shoulder, and from across a smoldering campfire, I saw her. Tamar. The morning sun lighted up the features of a man at her feet. Señor Rafael Ramon José Contuarius. The bullet hole in his forehead gave him an extra flourish. Now it was Señor Rafael Ramon José Contuarius, deceased. And the girl named Tamar was singing a love song. Back to Gunsmoke in just a moment. Combining modern detective methods with secrets of the mysterious East, The Green Llama offers CBS listeners a new thrill now on Sundays. Once he has heard of a crime or an injustice, Jethro Dumont, a wealthy young American just returned from 10 years in Tibet, brings into play his quick wit and knowledge of illusion to thwart the evildoers. Join him Sundays as he continues his fight against crime on this side of the Pacific, wearing green, the color of Tibetan justice, aided by Tulku, his trusted lieutenant. The Green Llama is a feature presentation of most of these same CBS stations. And now back to Mark Dillon, United States Marshal, and Gunsmoke. When they pinned the marshal's badge on me, they said I had a job to do. This morning, my job was a man with a bullet hole in his forehead and a marshal with a wound in his shoulder. The dead man was Rafael Ramon José Contuarius, and the marshal was me. And there was a girl named Tamar.
You have slept long, Chico, without dreams.
How do you know there were no dreams, Tamar?
Because I saw Death give you a little piece of himself. And then ride away on his black pony.
Yeah, I'm lucky. How did I get here?
Senor Contrarius and I brought you here. The wagon over there in the burrow. You are muy lucky, Chico. The bullet was for your heart, but it spent itself in your shoulder. It was not your time to die.
But it was Contrarius's time to die, huh?
Perhaps his grave has been empty too long.
And you knew him well?
See, I knew him.
Well enough to kill him?
I did not kill him. Senor Contrarius was my protector.
What did he protect you from? Himself?
I like your mouth better when it is gentle, Chico.
Then who did kill him?
I do not know. While we were here trying to help you, a bullet came out of the darkness and found Contrarius.
How come you picked this place?
It is a place, Senor Contrarius, and I knew well.
Oh, like that, huh?
It is a place where Senor Booth would not look for you if he knew you were still alive.
Booth? Oh, so that's his name, the man in the beaded jacket. How come he didn't finish me?
When we heard the shot, Senor Contrarius and I ran out of the White Buffalo. I persuaded Senor Booth that you were dead.
Booth persuades easy, huh?
He persuades easy, for Tomar. The shots were heard, people came. Senor Booth does not like too much attention.
Well, he's going to get all of mine, Tamar. Undivided.
I don't advise it, Chico. If you live, go back to Dodge City. If you die, die in Dodge City. Oh, wait. The Senor Contrarius in a burro car.
Where is he? Where is he? Answer me, woman. Answer me.
There, Senor. Behind the marshal.
The marshal? Hello, Marshal. They said you'd been killed. Get up, Contrarius. Get up.
He's dead, ma'am.
Oh. He shouldn't be lying there on the cold ground.
I'll lift him up into the car.
I will help you, Senora.
If you so much as touch him, I'll kill you. Come along.
You're pretty strong to lift him yourself.
I've done it before. You're hurt, Marshal?
I'll be all right.
You can come too if you want. Take you back to town.
Look, ma'am, I'm sorry about...
Sorry? Huh. You should never have left Dodge City. All it got me was a dead husband. Get in.
Somewhere on that long wagon ride back to town, Mrs. Contrarius squeezed a tear onto her cheek. Just one tear. But for her, it was a major emotion. The sun was doing its best to char the wood frame buildings when we hit Gaujai. She drove past the White Buffalo to the far edge of town, pulled up at a tar paper shack.
Oh! Here we are, Marshal.
Why bring me here? Just so I could pick my own gutter? Why didn't you leave me in the cottonwoods to die?
That door. That shack door right over there. Try it.
All right, ma'am.
Get in.
You were dead. Hey, you're hurt. Come on in.
Thanks.
Who sent you here?
Mrs. Contrarius.
Huh? Better cut away that shirt.
Why'd she send me here, Greg?
Not neat, Marshal. Not neat at all.
Lie here, Greg.
Lie still. I'll get some things.
You haven't answered my question.
I do things with my hands, Marshal. Spin roulette wheels. And extract bullets between spins.
You a doc?
Yeah, I'm a doc. Was. Had a shingle. Nice, shiny one. And they said I couldn't have it anymore. Malpractice, they said. What you looking at?
That roulette wheel on the table over there. Don't you get enough practice at the White Buffalo?
Don't strain yourself, Marshal.
I won't. I'm not too much alive. But I once knew a croupier clever enough to spin the wheel so that the ball would drop in any slot he wanted.
That'd be pretty hard to prove, wouldn't it, Marshal?
Yeah, it would.
Now, you want that wound fixed?
Uh-huh. I'll bite my lip real hard.
Do that, Marshal. It's a nice pose.
I bit my lip, but all I got was a pain in my mouth. And I didn't need that. There was enough pain. It started when Greg put a scalpel against my shoulder, and it went on from there. It went on for a long time. Finally, everything gathered into focus.
Keep that bandage dry, Marshal. You'll be all right.
Thanks, Doc. What's your fee?
This bullet, the one I took out of you, I want it as a souvenir of the time I saved a Marshal's life.
You're welcome to it. Just tell me this. You know a girl named Tamar?
Girl in the Bible had that name.
Contrarius knew a girl named Tamar. Now he's dead.
Contrarius dead? Well, I suppose somebody wanted him dead.
Yeah. But stick around. I may want to talk to you again later.
Always a pleasure, Marshal. I'll be around. What are your plans?
I'm going to take a killer.
With your shooting arm in a sling? I don't think so.
I'll gamble on it, Greg. Want odds? I got up and left Greg's shack. Taking a killer needed a little preparation. And right now, preparation meant talking to Mrs. Contrarius. But something stopped me. It was the funeral Mrs. Contrarius was celebrating for her dearly departed. Somewhere, she'd found a black ostrich plume and pinned it to the donkey's head. The cart she always used was draped in banners of black silk that looked suspiciously like the shreds of an elegant petticoat. Three grinning Indian kids, maybe 8 years old, were beating the drum, clapping the cymbal, playing a flute. The rear of the parade was brought up by a bunch of other Indian kids, looking solemn because their new shoes hurt. And on the cart, in an open pine box, lay Señor Contrarius. I looked inside. The senor was still very aristocratic. I looked again, closer. Then I knew I just had to talk to Mrs. Contrarius. It was maybe an hour later when she drove up to the White Buffalo alone, her cart empty and stripped of the banners. She looked uncomfortable in her black cotton.
Lend me your good arm, Marshal. I don't want to rip this dress.
Yes, ma'am. There you are. Nice funeral, ma'am.
Thanks, Marshal. Kids behaved real nice, didn't they?
Yeah. You done a good job on them, ma'am.
Thanks. You haven't been very successful, have you, Marshal?
Maybe that's your fault. Maybe you haven't told me enough.
About what?
About Tamar and your husband, for instance.
What about Tamar and my husband?
This about them, ma'am. They were real good friends. That could be a reason for you to kill your husband.
Could, Marshal, but it wasn't. Maybe he was killed because he found out who was cheating this wheel and you didn't.
But I did.
Then why don't you take him?
You want me to take Greg Hagen?
Greg Hagen? I don't believe it. Hagen's an honest man, as honest as you are, Marshal. Can you prove what you're saying?
I don't know. But I'm sticking around to see if I can. And I'm sticking around to see if I can bring in a killer.
Who is it?
Maybe you. Maybe Greg, maybe Booth, the man in the beaded jacket. Maybe even the girl named Tamar.
Then come on in and have a drink. You look peaked.
I followed her into the casino. In an hour, it began to fill up. I hid myself behind the stairs where I had a clear view of the roulette table and waited. About 8, she walked through the door. Tamar. Tamar, in a dress of red. Tamar, buckled with silver. She strolled over to the table and put some chips on the black as Greg spun. There was no sign of recognition between them.
Seven black, seven pays black pay.
Hey,
place your bet.
On the next spin, Tamar won again. Then she lost. She doubled her bets and won more times than she lost. After a while, she stopped playing colors and switched to single numbers. 35-1. She kept on winning, about one out of four. In an hour, there was roughly $20,000 stacked in front of her. And in an hour, there wasn't any doubt they were a team, and Greg was spinning a crooked wheel.
13 black. 13 pays, black pays.
Well, you're lucky. You're very lucky tonight, Tamar.
Tonight, Senora. I am always lucky at your tables, no?
Not as lucky as tonight. Sorry, men. This is a private table from now on. You can all move over to the second table. Wheel, right over there.
Well, it looks to me like big
private table, Senora?
Yes, just you and this gentleman.
Mrs. Contrarius was playing it smart. The man she thumbed at over her shoulder was Booth in his beaded jacket. I could have made my move then, but I decided to wait for the piece to play itself out. Mrs. Contrarius was getting them all together, and this show was too good to spoil. Greg, Booth, and Tamar.
This is my last spin.
That's all right, Tamar. All Mr. Booth wants is just one spin. Right, Mr. Booth?
Yeah, just one spin. With a little lady.
But I was...
Mr. Booth, huh?
Yeah.
Well... I suppose it is all right. Spin the wheel, Greg.
We'll spin. Once more.
Bueno. All of my money on number one.
Number one, huh? That's a good number. Number one. I'll take 10,000 in gold on number one.
Oh, that's all.
Three red. Three pays, red pays.
Greg, well, you double-crossed me.
I double-crossed you.
It don't matter, Tamar.
Greg didn't have a chance. The knife he tried to draw was hammered back by the bullets from Booth's gun. They tore through his hand and across his chest. Suddenly, his face changed. He looked young and hurt and ashamed of the blood that he couldn't hold back. Booth held his guns like they were dogs on a leash that could snap easy.
Keep back. All of you. Marshal, you can quit playing possum now. It'd make me real happy if you try to follow us. Pick up the money and let's go, Tamar. Nobody move. Nobody move.
You let him get away, Marshal.
I don't think so, ma'am. He'll be wanting to finish me off. I'm going to give him his chance. I could have looked for him in a lot of places, but he was with Tamar. That narrowed it down. There was only one place to look. It was dawn when I found him, resting easy in the cottonwood clearing.
I knew you'd have to come after me, Marshal. You know, you're funnier than an actor I saw once in Dodge. You're much funnier. Maybe you laugh too easy, Booth, like you kill too easy. Marshal, with his gun arm in a sling, chasing a killer.
Go away, Marshal. Go away while there is still time.
I got nothing but time. I'll wait. That's where you're wrong, Marshal. You got no time at all. Yeah?
Go! Chico, this I do not believe. It is impossible that someone could shoot faster than Senor Booth. With your left hand. Oh, Chico. You are so very quick with your gun. I like that about a man.
Take it easy, Tamar. Come on, let's go.
Go? Oh, not now, Marshal. There is time. Sit here next to Tamar.
Like this?
See.
You know what I think?
Oh, Chico. Chico, do not talk now.
I think you had a great thing with Greg. He could put that ball in any number you bet on. Only that wasn't enough for you.
Oh, but it does not matter now, Carito.
You thought you could double your profits by throwing in with Booth. Maybe you were going to double-cross him, too. Like you double-crossed Contrarius and Greg.
Oh, do not worry about it, Chico. The money is yours, too.
It belongs to Mrs. Contrarius. And that's who's going to get it.
What? What are you talking about?
Take your choice. Come back with me to the jail in Gouge Eye, or I'll turn you over to Mrs. Contrarius. And I don't think she could stand having you alive.
Why, you...
Oh, Chico, surely. Surely you are playing with me, huh?
You murdered a man, Tamar.
Chico.
You killed Contuarius.
But Chico, I told you the shot that killed Contuarius came from the woods in back of the clearing.
Much closer than that. From your gun, Tamar. Contuarius had powder burns on his forehead, so that shot was fired from up close. I saw that when I looked into his coffin. Powder burns from your gun, Tamar.
We will go away together, you and I, Chico. Listen to me, Chico.
Contuarius found out you were double-crossing him with Greg, didn't he?
Listen to me.
Let's go, Tamar.
Listen to me, Chico. There is plenty of money, yours and mine. Listen to me, Chico.
She put her arms around my neck and her lips close to my ear. And for a long time, for a long, long time, first in English, then in Spanish, then in Cherokee, then in a language I couldn't recognize, she whispered at me every foul name in the book. She was talented. She didn't repeat herself once. Tamar didn't understand that a marshal had a job to do, and that the job got done. On the way back to Dodge City, I came across a cottonwood clearing I'd never noticed before. I rode down into it. A small animal scurried off a log and lost itself in the shadows. Then I was alone. For a time after that, for a long time after that, I thought about Tamar. They'd given her her guitar, but I knew she wouldn't be singing much longer. The rest of the way home, the country was dust. It got inside of my mouth, and it stayed there.
Gunsmoke featured Howard Culver as Mark Dillon. Supported by June Foray, Gerald Moore, Vic Perrin, Jack Crucian, D.J. Thompson, and Jay Novello. Music was composed and conducted by Del Castillo. The original story, by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, was directed by Richard Sandville. This is Alan Botzer, inviting you to listen again next week to Gunsmoke and another thrilling adventure with Mark Dillon, United States Marshal. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Featuring Gerald Moore in that episode of Gunsmoke, the pilot episode, called Mark Dillon, U.S. Marshal, from July 15th, 1949, before William Conrad took over the part of Matt Dillon. Speaking of taking over parts, George Burns is trying to find a position on the Jack Benny program with some help, a little blackmail, and can it be talent? Well, we'll find out as we hear from George Burns and Gracie Allen next. This is Old Time Radio Drama and the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gracie, trying to be helpful always, got George Burns and sometimes a lot of other people into trouble. Well, tonight she helps to get George and Jack Benny into trouble as she tries to find beauty where she can, whether it's in a beauty shop where she runs into Jack Benny, or in the arts, which, to use the term very loosely, applies to the Jack Benny program, which, according to Gracie, just needs a singer. In this broadcast from November 2nd, 1943.
Goodwin, speaking for Lever Brothers, makers of Swan, the new white floating soap that's pure as fine Castile. Well, it's Tuesday night again, time for another pleasant visit with George Burns and Gracie Allen, our guests, Jack Benny, Jimmy Cash, Felix Mills and his orchestra, and the Swan Test. And now, meet the people who live in the Burns house, George and Gracie. Well, Well, it's morning in the Burns home, and George is just coming downstairs to leave for the office.
Good morning, dear.
Good morning, darling. Look what the postman just brought you. A present from Pat O'Brien.
Oh. I'll bet Pat is sorry he started that rumor about me being a juggler. Open the package, dear.
All right.
I met him yesterday, and I told him a few jokes. I guess that convinced him I was a comedian. What are you laughing about? What's in the package?
A set of Indian clubs.
Next time I get my hands on that Irishman, believe me.
George. Before long, everybody will know that you're not a juggler. They'll know you for what you really are.
And, what is that?
Well, a singer, of course.
Oh, that. Oh, sure.
I wrote to our sponsor and suggested that you sing on our program every week.
That's the 12th time.
Yeah, but this time he answered.
Say, that's a good sign. Open the letter.
Wait till Bing Crosby hears you sing. He'll retire and start to raise a family.
Oh, Gracie. I'm not better than Crosby. As good, maybe, but, well, open the letter. What does the sponsor say?
Believe me, there are plenty of other big programs that would like to have George Burns as a singer.
Gracie, the letter. Open it. Well?
George, what are some of the other big programs?
Turn me down again, huh?
Oh, never mind, dear. You're a great singer. Even Bill Goodwin said that with a voice like yours, you ought to sing in our big army show.
Army show?
Yes. It's in charge of some officer named Major Bowes.
I'll forget it. I better get along to the office.
Yeah, I'll ride down in the bus with you. I have an appointment at the beauty shop.
Okay, let's go.
No way. Before we leave, won't you sing something just for me?
Oh, Grace.
Oh, please, dear. Just one little glorious burst of melody.
Well, all right. Just a gigolo. Everywhere I go, people know the part I'm playing.
Oh, God, you're wonderful. I won't be happy until your voice leaves the whole world the way it leaves me, weak and limp.
Thanks.
Oh, come on, I'm due at the beauty shop in 5 minutes.
What will it be today, Mrs. Burns? A shampoo and set?
Oh, yes, and I'm kind of in a hurry, Josie.
Well, I'll do my best, Mrs. Burns, but we're short-handed, and I have to work on the customer in the next booth, too. The old horse face, I hope he chokes.
He? You mean there's a man in the next booth?
Well, sort of a man.
Josie, where are you?
Oh, that's him. I wish he'd go sit on a hot curling iron.
Josie, come back here. This finger wave of mine stinks.
Is awfully familiar. I wonder who...
Josie, do you hear me? This finger wave stinks.
All right. Leave your hair on the table and I'll do it over again.
No, Josie. I'm sure I know that man. What's his name?
I'm not allowed to tell, Mrs. Burns. The old goat scared the newspapers might find out he goes to a beauty shop.
Oh, come on, Josie. Give me a little hint.
Well, he's the stingiest man in Hollywood.
Oh... Stingy, huh?
And how? When he gets a mud pack, we have to save the mud for him so he can put it in his victory garden.
Funny. I can't get it from that. Give me another hint.
Well, let's see. He used to drive an old broken-down Maxwell.
No, it's no use. I can't guess who it is.
You're not missing anything. He's tried to date every girl in town, and nobody will go out with him.
Oh, hello, Jack. How's Mary?
Gracie, is that you?
Well, yeah, come on into my booth, Jack.
Oh, sure.
Hello, Gracie. I guess you're surprised to see me here.
Well, yes, I am.
Well, you see, Mary lost her bobby pin the last time she was here. I dropped by to look for it. You know what the bobby pin situation is, terrible.
Oh, sure.
I bet you thought I was here to get a beauty treatment.
Uh-huh.
Gracie, you sound like you don't believe me.
Maybe that's because I don't.
Well, if I'm lying, may something terrible happen to Phil Harris.
Oh, Mr. Benny.
Yes?
Here's your mud. I wrapped it up for you.
Oh, well. Phil always played too loud anyway.
Well, Jack Benny in a beauty shop. Wait till the girls hear this.
Now, Gracie, look, listen, you must promise
girls,
me.
Oh, girls, I brought your swan soap. Oh, hello, Gracie.
Oh, hello, Bill.
Why, Jack Benny, what are you doing here?
Well, I'll tell you, Bill. He's...
Well, Bill Goodwin in a beauty shop. Wait till the girls hear this, huh, Gracie?
Wait a minute. I just came over to bring some swan soap.
Well, Bill, I...
Oh, Bill Goodwin has beauty treatment. That's really something to tell the girls, huh, Gracie?
Hey, look. The operators here use swan soap. Not only because it's so mild for the customer's complexion, but because that same mildness makes it great at home. For the dishes, light laundry, or for bathing the baby. Swan's the new white floating soap that's four swell soaps in one.
Well, Bill,
well, Bill Goodwin in a beauty shop. Really, I thought that curly hair wasn't natural. Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. No girl in this shop has ever laid a hand on me. Except, of course, after working hours.
Oh.
What are you doing here, Benny? Oh,
well, I'll tell you, Bill. Jack is home.
Bill Goodwin in a beauty shop. I'm getting manicures and everything.
I am not. My hands just happen to look gorgeous because I always wash my dishes with Swan.
Oh.
Swan is great for washing the dishes. Gives you loads of suds. Suds that are so mild and gentle, your hands don't get that rough red dish panty look.
Well, Bill...
Bill! Goodwin in a beauty shop. And to have his eyebrows plucked, that's something, isn't it?
Now, look, Jack. I told you, I just came here to deliver some Swan soap. Swan's a great wartime buy. What I want to know is, what's Jack Benny doing here?
Well, I'll tell you, Bill.
Yeah. Oh, Bill, go all nuts. Goodbye. Gracie, look, for heaven's sake, don't let out my secret. I mean, I don't want everyone I meet to know I've been taking beauty treatment.
Oh, don't worry, Jack. They'll never suspect it.
Well, anyway, don't you tell. You know, if the newspapers get hold of it, I'm cooked. And you know how the gang would kid me on my program.
Oh, yeah, your program. Jack, you don't want this to get in the papers, huh?
No, I'll do anything to keep it out, Gracie, anything.
Oh, good. Starting Sunday, Jack, George will sing on your program.
George?
Yes.
Sing?
Uh-huh.
Gracie, I've heard prettier noises come out of Carmen Lombardo.
I see. Well, excuse me, Jack. I'm going to telephone a little news item to the paper.
Wait. Oh, you mean George Burns?
Yes.
Oh, George, your husband.
Yes.
Oh, old Sugar Throat.
George.
Oh, well, I don't suppose it would hurt if George sang on my program. What?
Well, I was thinking of having him sing every week.
No.
Well, I'll call the paper.
But, Gracie, this is blackmail.
I know. Cute of me, huh?
Yeah, cute.
The Swan Quintet joins our popular tenor Jimmy Cash in an enchanting ballad from the top musical show of the year, Oklahoma.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. There's bright golden haze on the meadow.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow.
Corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Okay.
beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Oh, what a beautiful day.
Well, we're back at the Burns home now. Jack Benny is pleading with Gracie to change her mind as they wait for George to come home from the office.
But why does it have to be my program, Gracie? I mean, why don't you have George sing on Eddie Cantor's program?
Well, because I didn't catch Eddie Cantor in a beauty shop with his toupee and curlers.
Hey, there must be some other show he can go on. Maybe Gabriel Heater needs to sing. Or Mr. Anthony. I mean, why don't you let George be his problem?
Oh, you amaze me. How can Jack Benny, who has the greatest talent in the world, fail to recognize George's talent?
Oh, do you really think I have the greatest talent in the world?
Well, certainly. Rochester, Dennis Day, Mary Livingston.
Oh, I see.
And now I've got a big thrill for you. I have your program for next Sunday night all planned.
You have?
Yes. It'll be the new and entertaining Jack Benny program featuring George Burns, California's answer to Frank Sinatra.
I can't do it, Gracie. I mean, I can't allow George to sing.
Well, shall I call the papers and tell them about the beauty shop?
He sings.
Now, listen to the way I have the program all worked out. You're the star, so of course you come out first.
Thank you.
Your line is, hello. And then George comes out for his opening number.
I just say hello.
Well, we could make it hello, everybody.
No, I don't want to hog the whole show.
Well, then George sings his second number, and back you come again.
Good.
To announce George's next number.
I hope my throat stands up.
And then right after that, Dennis Day comes in.
Dennis Day?
Yes.
Well, doesn't George do all the singing?
Well, yes, but I thought you might want a few laughs on the program.
Oh, yeah, I'll be glad to have them. I will, yes.
Then as soon as George finishes his next number, I'll come...
Now, wait a minute. Gracie, George can't sing the whole program. I mean, he's not that good. I know music, you know, I'm a musician.
You are?
Well, I play the violin, don't I? Well, don't I?
You're cute.
Look, Gracie, all that I'm...
Why, Jack Benny.
Hello, George. How's the juggling game?
I'm not a juggler. Why doesn't everybody stop with that?
Oh, now, dear, don't get excited. Jack has some marvelous news for you. Tell him, Jack. But, Jack, I think I'll go call the papers.
All right. I'll tell him.
Oh, good. I'll run out and make some coffee.
Well, Jack, what is it you want to tell me?
Well, First, I'd like to remind you that you're my dearest friend, George.
And you're my dearest friend, Jack.
I mean, you're even more than a friend to me, George.
You're even more than a friend to me, Jack.
I love you. I love you like a brother, George.
I love you like a brother, Jack.
I mean, I'd never do anything to hurt you, George.
Thanks.
Wait a minute, I'll try that again. I'd never do anything to hurt you, George.
I said thanks.
George, look, I mean, I wouldn't louse you up if you had a comedy program.
If I had a comedy program.
I mean, look, you're my dearest friend.
Look, Jack, what's the news,
Jack? I mean, you're even more than a friend to me.
The news, Jack.
Look,
what's the news?
What pals we've always been,
George. The news, Jack. You have some news for me.
Look, remember the time in Cincinnati when you were broke and I gave you $10?
It was Cleveland, Jack, and I gave you
$20. Well, I had the state right. It was Ohio.
Yeah, the news, Jack. What's this news you have for me?
Well,
yes.
Well, dear, did Jack tell you the news?
No, not yet. He's been leading up to it by the way of Cleveland and Cincinnati.
Jack, I'll bet little Abner won't be the funniest thing in the paper tomorrow.
Oh, all right. George, look, I want you to sing on my radio program.
Why, Jack Benny.
Now, don't be hasty, George. I mean, don't jump at it. Think it over for the duration.
I don't have to. I'll sing a dozen songs for you, pal, and it won't cost you a cent.
For free?
Sure.
No. I can't think of it that way.
Well, all right, then you can pay me.
No, I can't think of it that way either.
I know what's making Jack hesitate, dear. He hasn't heard you sing recently. Sing Ain't Misbehaving for him.
Sure, glad to.
Well, sit down, Jack.
No, I'll take it standing up.
Now, come on, dear.
No one to talk with all by myself. No one to walk with, I'm happy to be on the show. Hey, misbehaving, saving all my love for. Oh, baby, love for you, really saving love for you.
He doesn't juggle at all.
No.
I know for certain you're the one I love. I'm through with flirting, it's you that I'm thinking of. Hey, misbehaving, saving all my love for. Oh, baby, my love for you.
Jack, what makes you think he's a juggler?
He must be.
Jackie Horner, in the corner, don't go nowhere. And I don't care all your kisses that you gave me, baby. Daddy, daddy, daddy.
I might be blood and guts, but that's just guts.
Don't stay out late and I don't care to go. I'm home about it, me and my radio. Hey, misbehaving, saving all my love for you.
Well, Jack?
Gracie, call the newspaper.
Time for Felix Mills and his orchestra. Tonight, from Felix's memory album, it's Honeysuckle Rose.
Something? I got the impression that Jack Benny didn't like my singing.
Oh, George, that's silly. Didn't you hear him tell me to call the newspapers? He wants to give them a big story about you.
Yeah, but I noticed that while I was singing, he kind of turned green.
Oh, well, of course he turned green. You sang exactly like John McCormick.
Oh, so that's what
it
was.
Well, sure. Now, I'll go in and talk to Jack. You stay here and spray your precious little adenoids.
Okay. From time to time and every time.
Jack.
Yeah?
Well, naturally, you were joking before when you told me to call the newspapers, weren't you?
Not me, Gracie. Look, I'd rather have everybody know I was in a beauty shop than have Sugar Throat smell up my program.
Well, I'm warning you. I'll phone the paper.
Phone them.
This is my last warning, Jack.
Go ahead.
I'll phone the paper.
Phone them.
This is my last warning, Jack.
Go ahead.
I'll phone the paper.
Phone them.
This is my last warning, Jack.
Go ahead.
Up on the paper.
For Pete's sake, phone him.
No, Jack, no, I can't. I'm too fine, too decent. I can't stoop to blackmail when I see it isn't working.
Now, please, don't think I'm a heel, Gracie. I'm kind of animals. I'm fond of children, but I just don't like George's voice.
Oh, you're fond of children, huh?
I love them.
Poor little Junior.
Poor little who?
Junior. He'd be so proud if he knew that his daddy had sung on the Jack Benny program.
Gracie, you mean...
Yes. George and I are parents now. He's the father and I'm the mother.
Gee whiz, I can't believe it. How, when did it happen?
Well, I don't remember exactly. We were so excited at the time.
Well, I'll be darned. Good old George has a baby. It hardly seems possible.
Yes. I was amazed when George told me.
I just can't get over it, Gracie. I'm so happy for you. So happy for George. Who does the kid look like?
Like me.
I'm so happy for the kid. Say, could I see him? I'm crazy about kids.
Really, Jack?
Oh, sure. I mean, many's the time I bought a bag of candy and blew up the bag to amuse a kid. Imagine good old George, a father.
Well, you can do something awfully nice for Junior. Let his father sing on your program.
Gracie, I'm mad about children.
Now,
but that...
please, Jack. The baby adores you. When you're on the air, he lies in his crib, gurgling with his little foot in his mouth. When Fred Allen's on, he puts his foot in his ear.
Gee, what a smart little rascal.
I know you'll do it for Junior. I can look in your sensitive blue eyes and tell that you won't disappoint him.
They are blue, aren't they? All right, George can sing one song just for the baby.
Well, let him sing two songs. We're expecting another one.
Really?
Yes.
Good old George.
Did I hear somebody call me?
No, we were talking about you. Gracie told me everything. Congratulations, George.
You mean I can sing a song on your program?
Yes, sir. You deserve it. Gracie tells me there's going to be another one.
Well, two would be fine if it's all right with you.
Well, why not? Have you picked out a name for the second one?
Would you like Moon Glow?
Moon Glow Burns. Won't that be just a little too corny?
Oh, I don't think so, Jack. You know, while you were away, I took a few lessons from Crosby.
You did?
Yes.
Now, George, I know Jack's in a hurry.
Yeah, yes, I'll be going. But, George, first, can I see the nursery?
Well, Jack...
The nursery?
Hiya, folks. What goes on?
Oh, Bill, am I glad to see you.
Bill, I just heard the news. Now, why didn't you tell me that George and Gracie had
Yes, Bill. Oh, why didn't you tell Jack what George and I had?
Well, what did you have?
An idea for you to announce Jack's program, and George sings on it.
Huh? But I...
Oh,
meant...
well, that's a great idea, Jack. I'd be glad to. Now, wait a minute. I have an announcer, Don Wilson.
Well, okay, you can have two announcers.
Don Wilson is two announcers.
But Don can't announce your program, Jack. He doesn't know anything about Swan soap.
Swan soap?
Well, sure. He doesn't know that Swan is the new white floating soap that's four soaps in one. The soap for dishes, light laundry, bathing the baby, or for your hands and face. Don doesn't know that.
Well, I could teach him. I mean, what am I saying? I don't sell soap. I sell grape nuts flakes.
Well, but that's ridiculous, Jack. Can you bathe a baby with grape nuts flakes?
Well, I wouldn't want to answer that until I've talked to my sponsor.
Well, I can...
They're very resourceful, you know.
Well,
They may be working on that right now.
Well, I can tell you the doctors recommend Swan for bathing the baby. Swan is so mild it's kind even to a little baby's tender skin. Pure as fine Castile, too, so you know it must be great for your complexion.
Gee, bathing a baby. You ever bathe that little darling of yours, George?
Don't be silly. We take showers.
Yes, and Gracie breaks it in two so she can...
Breaks it in two?
Well, sure, Jack. Swan breaks in two so you can use half in the kitchen for your dishes and light laundry and half in the bathroom for the baby or for your tub or shower.
Oh, well, look, Bill, don't bother to tell me about Swan so because I'm just using George on my program, not you. You see, I'm only doing it for Junior.
Junior? Well, yes, George. That's what Jack calls you because you're so much younger than Jack.
No, look, I mean the baby.
The baby?
Well, yes, that's what he calls me because I'm so much younger than you.
No, Gracie, look, I'm talking about your child.
Child?
Well, goodbye, Jack. See you at rehearsal Sunday.
Wait a minute. Gracie, what does he mean, our child?
Oh, dear. I knew there was something I forgot to tell you.
We haven't got a child.
You. Well, so that's it, Gracie. Just to get George on my program, you invented a baby.
Oh, no, I can't take credit for that. They were invented years ago.
Don't try to get out of it. I don't want to sing on the radio if I have to get on by tricks. I'll apologize to Jack.
I'm sorry, Jack.
And don't ever do a thing like that again.
I won't, dear.
Ever, understand?
Yes, dear.
Come on, Jack. I'll walk you down to the corner.
My goodness, George, what you go through with a name.
Hello, Fibber. This is Gracie. Oh, would you and Molly let George sing your program next week? Yeah, I know you've got a singer, but I thought you might do it for Junior. Yes, you see, he's just had a baby.
And he's so funny. George and Gracie will be right back. I'm just going to be here long enough to remind you that the government needs your waste kitchen fat more than ever before. Now, I know sometimes it's a lot of trouble to render the extra fat you trim from meat and to strain all your waste fats from roasting and frying. Those waste fats are so urgently needed for making glycerin. That glycerin is so necessary for making ammunition that I know you won't mind doing whatever you can. So don't forget, huh? Turn those waste fats into your butcher and keep turning them in. Well, here they are again, those ever-loving Burnses, George and Grace.
George, I've got some wonderful news. Little McGee wants you to sing on his program.
Really?
Yes. And when he comes over to close the deal, would you sort of fold this napkin into a triangle?
What?
Well, for some silly reason, he thinks we have a baby.
Again?
Good night,
sir. Good night.
Of Swan, the new white coating show. Join George and Gracie in inviting you to tune into your Columbia station again next week, same time. Don't forget, George Burns and Gracie Allen, CBS next Tuesday night. Now, till next week, this is Bill Goodwin saying, well, I, Swan, how about you? Good night, everybody.
Burns and Allen, with Gracie Allen trying to get husband George Burns booked on the Jack Benny program as a singer. Some delightful confusion between Jack and George and having to do with singing versus having babies. It's a great radio bit. Well, speaking of singing, and somebody who did quite a bit of singing on the Jack Benny program and had his own orchestra, here's Phil Harris with some ideas about what he likes about the South.
Come with me to Alabama. Let's go see my dear old mammy. She's frying eggs and broiling hammy. That's what I like about the South. Now there you can make no mistakey. Where those nerves are never shaky. Ought to taste a layer cakey. That's what I like about the South. She's got baked ribs and candied yams. Oh, sugar cured Virginia hams. Basement full of those berry jams. And that's what I like about the South. Hot corn, bread, black-eyed peas. You can eat as much as you please. Cause it's never out of season. That's what I like about the South. Ah, don't take one. Have two there. Dark brown and chocolate, too. Suits me, they must suit you, because that's what I like about the South. Well, it's the way, way down where the cane grows tall, down where they say you all walk on in with that southern drawl, because that's what I like about the South. It's down where they have those pretty queens to keep a dreaming, those dreamy dreams. Well, let's sip that absinthe in New Orleans. That's what I like about the South. Here comes come old Bob with all the news. Got the box, back coat, and the button shoes, but he's all caught up with his union dues, and that's what I like about the South. Here come old Roy down the street. Who, can't you hear those scuffling feet? He would rather sleep than eat and that's what I like about the South. Every time I pass your door, you act like you don't want me no more. Why don't you shake that head and sigh, and I'll go walking right on by. Gone on and on and on. Honey, when you tell me that you love me, then how come you close your eyes? Did I tell you about the place called Doo-Wah Diddy? It ain't no town and it ain't no city. It's just awful small, but awful pretty with Doo-Wah Diddy. Come here to criticize. I'm not here to sympathize. But don't tell me those no good lies, cause a lying gal I do despise. You love me like I love you. Send me 50 PDQ. Roads are red and violets are pink. I'm gonna get old 50, I don't say. Got backbones and turnip greens, ham hocks and butter beans. You and me in New Orleans, and that's what I like about the South.
Born Southerner Phil Harris with That's What I Like About the South, Phil Harris and his orchestra, one of the big ones from the 30s and 40s. One of the big ones from the 30s and 40s and years before and years after was Tarzan. And we'll hear about the origins of Tarzan in an episode from 1932. It's next. This is Old Time Radio Drama and the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.